Hi and welcome to another podcast from The Human Diver, where we are looking to apply counter-errorism techniques in diving. By that we mean human factors and non-technical skills. Our goal is to give you the knowledge and skills so that your dives are safer and more enjoyable. The podcast consists of audio blogs which have been published on our website. Show notes will be provided so you can dig deeper if you want. Ready to jump in? The following post provides two accounts of the same event. The tragic loss of a 12-year-old girl during a diver training program in Texas last year. The first story is told using the sort of language used by a media outlet or seen on social media. It contains counterfactuals and seeks to find blame in the individuals present. After you read this first narrative, think about where you would focus your efforts to prevent this event from occurring again. What elements of what happened? What learning can be had? Who is to blame? Or why the suffering? Are you focused on? The irony of using a burning pitchfork image for the website blog is not lost on me to generate interest in a post about learning and not blaming. However, social media algorithms don't like learning. They are geared towards disharmony. A 12-year-old wanted to be a veterinarian. The diving industry killed her. DH was 12 years old, weighed 77 pounds, and dreamed of becoming a veterinarian. On August 16th, 2025, she drowned during her first open water scuba dive in Texas. Court filings in the wrongful death case against the training company, the facility, and two of the world's largest diving agencies reveal a story that is far harder to stomach than a simple tragedy. If DH had received the 10 hours of pool training that NAWI's own standards required, she would have entered the water better prepared. She received three. If she had been given a dive computer, a basic piece of equipment that tells a diver their depth, she might have known she was sinking to 45 feet instead of the 16-foot training platform. She was never given one. The shop's policy was not to provide them. If the instructor had slept the night before, his judgment might not have been compromised. According to the court filings, William Armstrong had worked a full day shift as a sheriff's deputy, then an overnight security shift, then drove an hour to the dive site. He began teaching eight students, including DH, having had little or no sleep in over 24 hours. If anyone had noticed she was missing for more than a few minutes, a search might have found her in time. 30 minutes passed between her last being seen alive and her recovery from the lake floor. But none of these things happened, and the court filings reveal that none of them were accidents. A 2017 video surfaced showing Scuba Toys owner Joseph Johnson bragging to staff about the number of students his company had killed. He told them their insurance broker had assured him they could kill two a year and be fine. Standing next to him in the video was Rick Golden, NAWI's regional representative. The man allegedly responsible for supervising Scuba Toys' compliance with safety standards at that time. He said nothing. That video was passed up to NAWI's top management. According to the filings, the CEO specifically declined to take any action against Scuba Toys or Johnson. The company continued operating. It continued certifying over 800 students a year. And DH continued to be the kind of child who walked into the room and made it brighter. She deserved better. The system was designed to deliver exactly this. The second story is where the learning opportunities are greater. This is the same incident. The same child, the same lake, the same day. But told the way the diving community needs to hear it, not to assign fault, but to understand how a system produced this outcome and what we can change. Note, the word count is almost the same, approximately 380 words. Where would you look now when it comes to reducing the likelihood of the same event from occurring? The system that shaped DH's dive, a Liozzi learning narrative. The training organization had built a workflow that moved students from pool to open water in compressed timeframes. Under those conditions, it was normal to advance students after 3 to 4 hours rather than the 10 that standards described. The system made that decision easy and routine. Nothing in the feedback loop flagged it as unusual. The facility had chronic visibility conditions, 2 to 4 feet on the day in question. This was known. It was normal for that site. The organization had no mechanism to restrict operations based on environmental conditions, so the visibility became part of the background, not a decision point. It simply was. The instructor arrived having worked through the night in another role. Part-time instruction was common across the industry. There was no fitness for duty check, not because anyone chose to ignore it, but because the system had no such step in its design. The conditions he faced were shaped long before he entered the water. The student entered the water without a dive computer. The organization's policy was not to provide them. This meant the student had no independent depth or time awareness. Under those conditions, complete reliance on the instructor for depth monitoring was built into the task design, not a choice made on the day, but a feature of how the system was structured. During the second descent, the group spread out in low visibility. The student became separated. The system had no real-time accountability mechanism, no continuous headcount, no proximity alarm, no structured search protocol ready to activate. When the separation was noticed, the response was improvised. The analysis suggests several interacting conditions shaped this outcome. The task design assumed visibility and supervision capacity that the environment did not support. The equipment design removed the student's ability to self-rescue. The organizational design normalized compressed training and removed the points where conditions might have triggered a different decision. Ask what normal looks like. At an individual element, not when the elements converge. Accidents happen as deviations from normal, not as deviations from rules. No single element explains what happened. The outcome emerged from how these elements interacted. That is where learning lives and where change must begin. The second story doesn't contain the emotion from the first story, and that is intentional. The second story also doesn't contain the real details. My experience is that an effective second story is at least 5 times as long as the first story. People don't read that long, though. I have linked to 2 other pieces to consider reading in the show notes. One looks at cognitive dissonance in the context of this story and why hurting prevents change. And the second looks at what is the purpose of an investigation and addresses the first 4 questions right at the top of the post. I first posted the above story on social media. In this blog, I can add a bit more than in that post. Comments made that I've answered. If a system can fail under normal, predictable conditions, then the lesson is not about context. It is that the system must change, and that is what I feel is missing here. Define system failure. This statement focuses on outcomes. Many, many dives take place in these conditions, as individual factors or a number of them coming together, without a death taking place. Poor visibility, normal. High student ratios, normal. Children in class, normal. People having 3 hours instead of 10 pool training, normal. Instructors having limited experience, Linnea case, not this one, normal. Time pressures, normal. Commercial pressures, driving class size, normal. Training platform above a big drop, normal. Instructors and students churning viz, normal. Thermocline, normal. Inability to share stories due to judgment when pushing boundaries, normal. There's a whole master's thesis on that. How many of these types of events have occurred together and nearly ended up as a fatality but didn't? And because of the social and cultural behaviours of the diving system, they don't get shared, and we don't hear how often the margins are slowly being eroded and then socially accepted as normal. Absolutely, the system must change, and that is what the longer blog is about. Bear in mind that the piece above was 400 words to match the 400-word judgmental piece. The other article about this case is currently 2,500 words. The human factors analysis of a Maltese fatality was 4,500 words. It is that the system must change, and that is what I feel is missing here. My takeaway from the Linnea Mills case wasn't about dry suits per se, it was about the self-certification process. This allows instructors with limited experience to say they are competent to teach without being observed as being competent to teach. Thanks for listening to this podcast. If you'd like to know more about what was discussed in this episode, head over to the Human Diver website at thehumandiver.com, where you will find details about our education programs, the If Only documentary, the book Under Pressure, and the many, many blogs we have published there. If you think others should listen and learn, consider sharing the link. Thank you.